All right, so this is Bio 160. It's May sometime, May 3rd. And we're finishing up the digestive system, actually answering some of the questions on the study guide. And then we're going to go to, urinary system. And then here's the urinary handouts. So as we go through the handouts for digestion, pass these around. So take one and pass it up. Take one, pass it up. Pass it up. Take one, pass it up. So there'll be plenty. Okay, so digestive system, as you see, was what kind of a fun system to look at and talk about, even though it's really very unspeakable items. But if you ever end up in healthcare, and every once in a while, you know, you got to continue your medical education. You got to do what they call continuing medical education or CME credits to keep your accreditation going. And is that missing something?
Questions?
There's no questions on it?
Just one question and no exam figures missing.
Holy cow, I don't know what happened. I got them on mine. Looks like it's the wrong one. It's for urinary, chapter 17, right? Okay.
No,
doesn't look like the right one. Well, we'll see how it goes. Okay. We'll work with what. Now, I'll give you next time what you're missing this time. But anyway, what I was saying about digestion is that whenever you, if you're involved with healthcare later on in your life and you got to get some CME credits, you got to continue your education. And if somebody is ever giving a talk from the GI department, those are the ones to go to, because I have found that those are the people that are the most interesting to listen to, as opposed to like neurosurgeon or something like that, because people that are dealing with a digestive tract always have the best sense of humor of any group in the hospital, all right, and they always know the best jokes. Of course, it's not always accurate to categorize everybody into a group like that, but that's generally so. Okay, take advantage of people from the GI department. I don't want to turn that on. Let's go over some of the remaining questions. Where did we leave off last time? Number five?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What's the function of the large intestine? How about digestion?
No.
No. It's not digestion. What about absorption of nutrients? No.
Water.
It's only water and salt. So the large, so it's kind of strange. It's not maybe what you would think. Okay, so for number five, function of large intestine is absorb water and salt. Should not be any nutrients in there. What do you call it if you get nutrients in your large intestine? That's called malabsorption syndrome. And what is that like? You should consider wearing a diaper, right? Because you'll be passing watery stool even unconsciously if you get malabsorption syndrome. And don't sit next to me, because you'll also be passing a lot of gas, right? That's malabsorption syndrome. So water and salt in the large intestine is okay, but no nutrients, because that's what the small intestine is there for, to absorb those. What vitamins are made in the large intestine, and how are they produced?
Vitamin K.
Vitamin K. 12. Yeah, thymine. And how are they produced? What's strange about how they are produced? Bacterial action. Bacteria make those vitamins for us. So you got to have those bacteria in your large intestine. All right, and then you got to know the parts of the large intestine. So let's start right at the ileum. What do you got? What's right between the ileum and the large intestine? Yeah, well... Yeah, it's there. But I was thinking of the ileocecal valve or ileocecal sphincter, and then you're in the cecum. And if you descend from the cecum, you find the appendix. And if you ascend from the cecum, that's called the ascending colon. And then you got the transverse colon, descending colon, the sigmoid colon, the rectum, the anal canal, and the anus. So that's all parts of the large intestine. What organ secretes gastrin? Stomach. Yep. And what are the effects of gastrin? Or what? How does gastrin affect the stomach? It's stimulatory to the stomach. Increases gastric secretions, and it increases motility of the stomach. So gastrin is excitatory. What organ secretes secretin? That would be the small intestine. And what effect does secretin have on the stomach? It's going to be opposite. It's going to be antagonistic to gastrin. So it's going to decrease gastric secretion. It's going to decrease motility. And why is it a good idea to have antagonistic control? Because gastrin, that's right, the action between gastrin and secretin are antagonistic. Why is that a good thing?
Balance.
That was a key concept. It means you have precise control and balance over the function of that organ, namely the stomach, if it's antagonistic control. What effect does secretin have on the small intestine? Oh, that's interesting. Okay. But it has an effect on the pancreas and liver and, right, by increasing secretions from the pancreas. It increases pancreatic secretions. And it increases, probably secretions from the liver, namely bile. And talking about bile, that's the next question. What's the function of bile? Remember, where does bile enter your digestive tract? Does it go into the stomach? Nope. You're right. It goes into the duodenum, which is the proximal segment of the small intestine. And the duodenum is accepting chyme from the stomach. What's the pH of the stomach? Yeah, it's very acidic. Right, so one function of bile is to decrease the acidity of the contents from the stomach to help protect the small intestine. So bile does neutralize stomach acids. That's probably not the most important function. But the other and probably most important function is that it acts like a detergent so that it emulsifies fats, right, that we eat in our diet, because fat can't be absorbed. It's not mixable with water. It has to mix with bile. And that breaks the fat down into smaller and smaller and smaller globules, and then it can be transported in our body, namely through lacteals. So those are the two functions of bile. Neutralizes acids, emulsifies fats. Okay, what compounds can be stored in the liver? Glycogen is a storage form of sugar. Vitamins, like what kind?
A, D, E, K.
Yeah, the fat-soluble vitamins, A, E, D, K.
Copper, iron.
And then a couple elements like iron and copper. A, B12, D, E, and K. And then you have some exam figures there. These are particularly good exam figures, I think, because they're easy to photocopy. Yep, that's all. Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay, so now we're ready for the next chapter. Unless there's a question. What organ secretes? Secretin. That's the small intestine. Small intestine secretes secretin. That's a hormone. Goes into the blood, and then it goes back to the stomach and small intestine. Okay. Okay, so urinary system. Let's talk about some of the components of the urinary system first. That's a pretty short list. It's just the kidneys, the ureters, the urinary bladder, and the urethra. So let's take a look and see where these things are. So So here we have a nice frontal view of somebody's torso, and we can see the kidneys. What kind of shape are these kidneys? They're kidney bean shaped. I don't know who got named after who, but obviously somebody did. And they're on either side of your vertebral column, on either side of your aorta. They're in your, kind of, they're located in your, by your abdominal cavity, but they're outside the peritoneal membrane, so sometimes we say they are retroperitoneal. They're more in your back than they are in your abdominal cavity. So they're suspended by a lot of muscle. Sometimes there's a bunch of fat pads around them to protect them from trauma, but they're anchored nicely up against your back muscles. All right, and the job, one of the jobs of the kidney is to produce urine. And urine is an excretory product, a fluid, and the way we get rid of it from our body is that it has to travel from the kidney to the outside, so it travels down this little tube right over here into a little storage area we call the urinary bladder, and that tube between the kidney and the urinary bladder we call the, go ahead, say it out loud. Yeah, ureter. Now some people would say ureter, okay, but ureters or ureter, I would understand either one, okay? And then it exits the urinary bladder via the urethra, and then it goes outside your body through the urogenital opening in all of our bodies. Okay, this area right here, this indentation in the kidney, that's called the hilum. And the hilum is just a little indentation. Even a kidney bean has a hilum. That's where it's connected to the mother plant. Right? And that hilum is the connection point where arteries and veins enter the kidney. So that's just how a kidney is attached to the rest of your body via the hilum right there, that little indentation. And even a pea has a little hilum on there. That's where all the vessels are attached to a pea with inside the pea pod. Okay, so that's that for the urinary system. What about functions of the urinary system? Well, it removes waste products from the blood. Like, for instance, who could give me a name of a product? We haven't really studied this particular waste product, but like urea would be a good example. U-R-E-A. And urea is a byproduct of protein metabolism or amino acid metabolism. Because amino acids have a nitrogen group, that's why we call it amino. Amino stands for nitrogen. And when amino acids get broken down, it produces ammonia. And ammonia, just like that cleaning solvent that we use in our house, have you ever breathed ammonia at all? What's it like? Oh, it's very obnoxious. As a matter of fact, they put ammonia in those little capsules when they want to wake somebody up, right? Or like when you're a boxer and you're kind of unconscious and they want to wake you up before they throw you back in the ring, what do? They crack a little ammonia pill and make you smell it, and it's just so obnoxious that it wakes you up, right? So ammonia is very toxic, and your body converts ammonia into urea, and then your kidneys are able to get rid of the urea very easily. All right, so remove waste products is one function. It helps control blood volume, because what do you excrete from your body when you urinate? Water, right? And that water comes from your blood volume, and so your blood volume is constantly being adjusted by the function of the kidneys. It also adjusts electrolyte levels. What's an electrolyte? Yeah, like a sodium ion or a potassium ion, even chloride ions. And if you, for instance, for lunch had 2 bags of potato chips and you didn't share them with anybody, what kind of big burden do you have? You have a big sodium burden, right? And it's because you've eaten all that sodium on all those potato chips, and it's the kidney then that will selectively excrete sodium in your urine to get rid of all that extra sodium that you've eaten. And the same could be said for potassium and some other ions. And the kidney also regulates pH. What's the chemical that's responsible for pH? It's not sodium. It is what? Which one? It is the hydrogen ion, right? So the concentration of hydrogen ion determines the pH. Don't forget, as the hydrogen ion concentration increases, what happens to the pH number? It's real funny. It goes down. Right, so as the hydrogen ion concentration goes up, it becomes more acidic, but we say the pH actually goes lower and lower and lower. So don't forget that little trick. And then also the kidney controls red blood cell production. The kidney actually secretes a hormone that goes and stimulates red blood cell production. And can you remember where red blood cells are produced? Bone marrow, and in particular red bone marrow. So there's a hormone that goes to red bone marrow to stimulate the production of red blood cells. Okay, what about some other functions? Well, there's some other organs that are important for excretion, like your skin can get rid of excess water through perspiration and salt, and even some nitrogenous compounds you can excrete through your skin. Your liver excretes bile, and because that has a breakdown product of red blood cells in it called bilirubin, that's a component of bile. And let's see, your intestines can excrete water and salt, and your lungs are excreting a gas, carbon dioxide. So you have other kinds of organs that are excretory in nature, right? But these up over here are particular to the kidney, for instance. Right. Anatomy of the kidney. Well, we said, it's a bean-shaped object. It's about the size of your fist. You have one on either side of your posterior abdominal wall. You can actually do quite well with just one. And we said it's retroperitoneal, means it's really outside the abdominal cavity. It's in that general area, but it's outside the abdominal cavity. The gross anatomy. When we say gross anatomy, what do we mean by gross anatomy? The kind of anatomy that grosses you out. No, that's not it. It's what? Gross. It's just big. It's just the kind of anatomy you can see with your naked eyes without a microscope or something funny. All right, so you can see the hilum. All right, and if we open up a kidney, we can look inside. You can see the pelvis and the sinus, calyces, the ureter we've seen already, the cortex, medulla, and renal pyramid. So that's your list. Now, where the heck are these things if we were to look at the inside of a kidney? Okay, here it is. So here's a kidney, pretty much in cross-section. And the outside of the kidney has a membrane around it. And we call that the renal capsule. Because the kidney itself doesn't have any bones, doesn't have any muscles, nothing really holding it together. So it's not that strong of an organ. So the capsule goes a long way in holding the kidney together in everyday life. And then the outer part of every organ, even your brain, what do we call the outer part, the most superficial part? That's what we call the cortex. And then the deeper part of any organ we call the medulla. So here is the renal cortex right here. And then the deeper parts are what we call the renal medulla. And you can see that the cortex and the medulla really do look different because it's made up of different kinds of things. In the medulla, we see these triangular-shaped objects. And so we just call those the pyramids. Those are the renal pyramids within the medulla. And in between the pyramids, we have these things that are just kind of going straight up and down. We call those the renal columns. The renal columns have blood vessels that are going from the medulla up to the cortex and then back down. And the pyramids have something in it that we call nephrons. And the nephron is the structural and functional unit of urine formation inside the kidney. And so that's a concept that we use a lot. And here, give me another structural and functional unit that we use to describe something before. Amino acids, basic building block of protein. Okay. Yeah, that's kind of along the lines I'm thinking, but structural and functional unit of contraction. What's the structural and functional unit of contraction of muscle called? That is the sarcomere. The sarcomere. So if you understand how a sarcomere is made up of, you know, the actin and myosin molecules and how they slide past each other to pull the Z lines together, if you know how one sarcomere works, guess what? You know how pretty much the whole muscle or any muscle works. Another structural and functional unit we talked about was a synapse. Okay, a chemical synapse. And so how does information go from one cell to another in a synapse? As an electrical signal, or can anybody remember that? A chemical signal, and then we would call that a neurotransmitter, right? And in particular, you'd probably know the names of a couple neurotransmitters, like what, acetylcholine would be an example, or norepinephrine. All right, but that's between a couple nerves or between a nerve and a muscle. But let's get back to the kidney. What's the structural and functional unit of urine production? Because that's mostly what the kidney does. What do we call that? That would be the nephron. So we got to spend some time understanding a nephron, but that's okay, because if we know how that nephron works, guess what? We know everything about how the kidney functions. So it's a powerful way, a powerful concept to understand how that whole kidney works. Okay. And this right here is a nephron that we see inside the kidney. And we can see that this part that has this little berry right here, this is up in the cortex. And then all these long tubes are down in the medulla. And they're all pointing to some central point at the tip of the pyramid. So all of these straight tubes that we see, millions of them, okay, pointing down toward the medulla, that's what gives the pyramids their particular shape. All the little nephron tubules pointing to the tip of this nephron, right, or the tip of this pyramid. All right, well, what are some other things about gross anatomy of the kidney? Well, we've got a renal artery. We've got a renal vein that's bringing blood in, taking blood out of the kidney. And then we have some tubes that are actually collecting areas for urine, and we call these calyces. At the tip of every renal pyramid, there's a minor calyx, and then a bunch of minor calyces are going to come together to form a major calyx. And what's inside these calyces again? Urine. That's right. So the urine is in there. And that's going to be collected by the major calyces, and the major calyces then are collected by the renal pelvis right here. So, and the renal pelvis is kind of a funnel-shaped collecting area, which then funnels urine into the ureter that takes it to the urinary bladder. So you got the calyces going to the pelvis, going to the ureter, then down to the urinary bladder. Okay, what else do we have? The renal sinus. If you look inside the medulla right here, if you look past the hilum, you see arteries and veins and all these calyces, and then you have some space between all these different structures. So inside the kidney right here, there's also a sinus. And the sinus doesn't have anything in it. It's just space. Okay, maybe some tissue fluid. All right, so that's everything about the gross anatomy of the kidney. That's why you have these pyramids here and the columns. Okay, so now let's look at some microscopic structures, namely this nephron right here. The nephron. So I want to put this slide up, and let's see how it's organized. Right, so the nephron is what? The structural and functional unit of the kidney. It's got a couple different components to it. It's got something that we call tubular elements, and then it's got something called vascular elements. And these are all basically tubes. A vascular element, what do you think a vascular element? What does a vessel contain? Like a blood vessel. I gave it away. I couldn't. A blood vessel contains what? Blood. So all of these vascular elements right here, these contain what? Blood. Right? The tubular elements, on the other hand, don't contain blood. Guess what they contain? The product of whatever this nephron is doing. And the ultimate product would be what? Urine. But along the way, we don't call it urine, we call it filtrate. Right, we call it filtrate. So the tubular elements start right here at Bowman's capsule, okay, and end with the collecting duct, not the glomerulus. The glomerulus actually belongs to the vascular element over here. So let's just look at first these tubular elements that make up a nephron. And then we'll look at some of the vascular elements. So here they are, Bowman's capsule, proximal convoluted tubule, this loop of Henle, the distal convoluted tubule and collecting duct. Here you have a picture of that, but it's not labeled. But I think maybe it's an okay place to start. I won't label it. I'll show you on a slide where it is labeled. But this little corpuscle right here, this is Bowman's capsule, this little circular area, this is where urine formation starts. It starts in Bowman's capsule. And then the fluid that ends up in Bowman's capsule is not urine. We call that the filtrate, right? Filtrate is in Bowman's capsule, and filtrate has got to move all the way through this tubule and down this one and up this one and then all through this one and then finally out the kidney. And when it's getting out of the kidney, we call that urine. So all the fluid in all these tubules right here is being processed. We call that filtrate, the stuff that's going to eventually become urine. The first segment, see this one with all these twists and turns in it? What do we call something that has a lot of twists and turns? Like on the surface of the brain, you have all these folds. Those are convolutions, yeah, on the surface of the brain. So this tube is what we call what? Convoluted, because it has all these bends and twists and turns in it. I always think of a proposition when you go to vote in California. Okay, you have proposition 1A and 1D, and if you ever try to read up on the proposition before you go vote, what do you learn from what people are trying to tell you about a proposition? Well, I can never figure them out, because the arguments for or against these propositions are always very convoluted. I can't follow them. They have so many twists and turns in them, I can't make sense out of them. So convoluted means what? It's not straightforward. Right, it's got a lot of twists and turns. So here, this one right here, since it's the first one coming off Bowman's capsule, we call that the proximal convoluted tubule. All right, and then we have the loop of Henle right over here, and then we got another what? Convoluted segment. So this is the second one, so we call that the distal convoluted tubule. And then lastly, which is not on this figure over here, we got a collecting duct, and that's what's going to contain urine. So those are the tubular elements of a nephron. Let's see what it looks like actually inside your book. All right, but we also see vascular elements on this diagram as well. So here is Bowman's capsule, and leading out of Bowman's capsule is the proximal convoluted tubule. This is all proximal convoluted tubule, and where does it end up? Right over here, and you can see the descending loop of Henle, and then the ascending loop of Henle, and then you got what? Then you got some more convoluted parts of this tubule. We call that the distal convoluted tubule. And that distal convoluted tubule is going to then take filtrate over to this collecting duct, and then that's going to leave this renal pyramid and go into a calyx right here. And what's ever leaving this collecting duct, we call that urine. Yeah, we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the function. But first, we're going to learn that anatomy. Okay, so those are just the tubular elements. And maybe I'll even draw it on the board real fast, just to show you that it's not really too hard. Maybe I'll do that right now. I'll draw it on the board. Okay, so what do we got? First, tubular elements. The first thing right here, this is Bowman's capsule. And inside Bowman's capsule, there's going to be a blood vessel that's going to give up plasma, which we call filtrate. So we have filtrate in Bowman's capsule, and it's going to make its way into another tube. But is it going to be a straight tube? No, it's going to be what? A lot of turns in it. So it's going to look kind of like this, right? And what do we call this thing? This is called the proximal convoluted tubule, or I just say PCT, right? That's on you got that list already, proximal convoluted tubule. And then after the proximal convoluted tubule, you got the loop of Henle that goes down into the medulla of the kidney. And this loop of Henle right here, this is since the filtrate is going this direction, we call that the descending loop of Henle, and it's coming back up this other side. This is the ascending loop of Henle, right over here, and that's connected to another segment that's convoluted. What's that one? That's the distal. That distal means what? Later on down the road. So distal convoluted tubule. Distal DCT. And then that's going to empty into the collecting duct right over here. So here's a collecting duct. And then coming out of the collecting duct is urine. So entering Bowman's capsule is filtrate. And it gets processed in the nephron, and then when it comes out, it's urine. Okay, so that is the tubular elements. Now, what about the vascular elements? Here are the vascular elements in red. So there's blood coming in this direction. So we're going to say from the renal artery right here, and it's going to go into Bowman's capsule, and it's going to form a capillary. What is the specialized function of a capillary? It's there for exchange. That means things can leave a capillary or enter a capillary. Things cannot enter or leave this thing. This is what we call the afferent arteriole. So things can't leave an arteriole. They're just the wall of this vessel is way too thick. But this capillary that we have right in here is real thin. And as a matter of fact, it's got holes in it. So it's very leaky. And it's going to leak plasma out from the blood into Bowman's capsule. And that fluid leaking out is what we call filtrate. Okay. Well, not all the blood leaks out of this capillary bed right here. Right, it leaves, it goes this way. This capillary bed right here has got a special name. It's kind of a funny name. It's called the glomerulus. So the glomerulus is that ball of spaghetti or the meatball inside Bowman's capsule. It's real leaky. That's leaking a lot of plasma out. Okay, now this vessel right here is what we call an efferent arteriole. Taking blood away from the glomerulus. And here is something real interesting. When you have a normal circulation, what am I drawing right here? What's this? That's the heart. Okay? And we have a blood vessel taking blood away from the heart. What's a blood vessel taking blood away from the heart called? Generally speaking, what is it? Any kind of blood vessel? An artery, right? So here's an artery. Artery, okay. And the artery, blood is going to flow into a capillary, right? So here's a capillary that's specialized for exchange. That's a capillary, and then here's a blood vessel going to take blood back to the heart. What's that called? That's a vein, right? So that's a vein. But every once in a while, this is a normal circulation, but every once in a while, we find a circulation that instead of when it leaves one capillary bed, sometimes it doesn't go right back to the heart, sometimes it goes to another capillary bed. Like, for instance, so this would be capillary bed number 2. This would be capillary number 1. And we could find that, for instance, we have capillary beds in the liver that absorb things that we eat, but some of the things we eat are very toxic and would really hurt us. And so before that blood returns to our body, it goes through another capillary bed in our liver, and the liver detoxifies it. So this would be stomach right here, and this would be liver. So toxins are taken out of the blood before it gets back to the heart. And this little vessel right here is what we call a portal vessel. And what we have in the kidney is another kind of portal vessel. So here's capillary bed number one. And then over here, we have another capillary bed surrounding all of these tubules. And so all of these capillaries right over here, we call these the peritubular capillaries. And then these empty into a vein, like, for instance, the renal vein. It takes blood back to the heart. So here's capillary bed number one, here's capillary bed number two. So that's everything that you see on your list right here. Okay, your glomerulus. Oh, look what's left off. Afferent arteriole. I don't see it on your list anywhere. Oh, there it is. Afferent arteriole, glomerulus, efferent arteriole, peritubular capillaries, and then it goes back to your veins. It goes back to your heart right there. So this thing right here is your nephron, which is, in your book, the same thing as this thing right here. But for some reason, at least when I draw it, I think I make it look more simple than the one that's in your book. Okay? Okay. So now let's talk about the function of the nephron. What the heck is it doing? Because somebody asked about that. There are three processes that happen inside this nephron. Here are the three steps: filtration, tubular reabsorption, and tubular secretion. So let's draw where these things happen. This process right here, where fluid leaves the glomerulus, this is process number one. So process number one is, what is that? Filtration. So just because you have pressure inside these blood vessels, that is forcing plasma out of the blood vessels into Bowman's capsule. And that fluid that's leaving these blood vessels is almost like plasma, but not quite. It doesn't contain large proteins. So large proteins can't leave your blood. Neither can cells. So red blood cells can't get into the filtrate, and white blood cells can't get into the filtrate. Neither can platelets. Unless, for instance, maybe you have an infection inside the kidneys or an irritation of the nephron. What would we call an irritation or an infection of a nephron? That would be called, nephritis, right? And if you have nephritis, then indeed you might have blood actually going through these tubules, and you might have blood in the urine as a result of that, okay? Okay, but usually it's just plasma. And when it gets into Bowman's capsule, we call that a filtrate. And then it's going to make its way through what? The proximal convoluted tubule, the loop of Henle, the distal convoluted tubule, and then urine. So what happens here for filtration, what is the process of filtration? Who has actually performed filtration today? Not inside your body, but around the house. You know what? Probably all of us have made tea or coffee or something. We've taken a bunch of particles, big particles like coffee particles, and some solvent, mixed them together. And then if we had all those coffee grounds and the solvent mixed together, then what do? We just drink it? No, they only do that in France. Okay. But what do here in the United States and in most places? We take that solution of coffee grounds and water and everything and put it through a filter, and filter out the large particles so that when we drink coffee, we don't have to what? Chew it up. It's not grindy. Well, that's a process of filtration. That's what's happening right here. Small molecules are leaving the blood and going into the filtrate, but not the large molecules, not the cells, for instance. Those stay in the blood. Okay. But so it's on the basis of size of the molecule that gets into the filtrate. So there are some molecules that are small that get in there. Like sodium is a very small molecule. Potassium is very small. Urea, that's a byproduct of protein that's very toxic, is small, can leave. But another molecule that's very small is glucose. So glucose can filter from the glomerulus into Bowman's capsule. But what could you tell me about glucose? Do you want to have any glucose in this filtrate all the way through this nephron and then being excreted in the urine? Would you like to have that? No, as a matter of fact, this is true. You don't want to have that happen. Because what is glucose? It's an energy molecule, right? And if we think of an automobile, for instance, okay, what molecule in your car would be like glucose in us? Gasoline, I agree. So, for instance, if somebody was excreting glucose in the urine, this is what it would be like for an automobile. Say on your way home tonight, you stop at the gas station and you fill up your gas tank with gasoline, and then you go home, and what would you do? You put a hole in your gas tank and let the gasoline dribble out of it overnight. All right, that would be just what? That would just be a big waste of energy for that to happen. So your kidney does not like to lose glucose in the urine. That's a big waste of energy. So what happens is that there are molecules, there are transporters inside the tubules that take glucose and put it back in the blood as this filtrate is moving through all of these tubules over here. This is the second function. So I'm going to put that over here. That's the second function. This is what we call tubular reabsorption. So tubular reabsorption is a process by which molecules that we want, like what? Glucose, that are lost in this filtration step are put back into the blood. That's tubular reabsorption. That's the second process. Okay. Also, in this blood right here, so here we have blood, we still might have some urea in the blood, and urea is toxic, so these peritubular capillaries can take urea that's in the blood and actually put it into the kidney tubule. This is the third process. So, for instance, glucose right here, process number two. Urea over here, process number three. This process, I guess I'll have to write it right over here. The third process is what we call tubular secretion. So tubular secretion, let's see if we can figure out how it goes. Where does something start and where does it end up for tubular secretion? It starts in where? What is that red stuff? That red stuff is blood. Okay, and where does it end up? In the filtrate, right? Because that's a filtrate coming all through here. So tubular secretion is from blood to filtrate. So let's write that down in our notes. Tubular secretion. Blood to filtrate. And I'll just put it in parentheses. What about process number two? Which is what? Tubular reabsorption. Where does it start? The filtrate, and where does it end up? In the blood. So let's write that down so it's easy to see. So tubular reabsorption is filtrate to blood. That's how things go. And what would be a good example of what kind of molecule goes from filtrate to blood? Glucose, because you don't want to lose glucose. What would be a good example of a molecule that is secreted, that goes from blood to filtrate? Yeah, urea. That's one of the molecules you don't want in your body. For instance, urea. All right, and what about that first process? Where's that first process at? Filtration. Where does filtration happen? Okay, right here in the Bowman's capsule. And how does stuff move for filtration? Where does it start? It starts in the blood and it ends up in the filtrate. So for filtration, maybe put in parentheses over here, blood into what? Filtrate. Blood to filtrate. So those are those three processes. Filtration happens in this structure here, but tubular reabsorption and tubular secretion happen everywhere within the rest of the tubules right here. And after all the glucose is taken out and as much urea is put into the filtrate as possible, okay, then that substance is what we call urine. So those three processes actually produce urine within the nephron. So what's that structural and functional unit of urine formation again called? The nephron. And what are the three processes that make urine? Number one is filtration. Number two is tubular reabsorption, like for glucose. And number three would be tubular secretion. And for instance, that would be a good molecule. What molecule would be good? For instance, urea that we don't want in. Some other molecules maybe for secretion would be if you had a bag of potato chips for lunch today and you had a lot of sodium because there's a lot of salt in potato chips. You have a lot of salt in your blood. So what's going to be secreted, not only urea, but other things that are in excess, like excess sodium. All right? Or if you ate a lot of acid for lunch, maybe excess hydrogen ions can be secreted. So the kidney can help maintain your pH because hydrogen ion is the basis of your pH, right? What kind of foods contain a lot of acid? Yeah, like soda pop, especially Coca-Cola, or salad dressing if it has vinegar in it, because vinegar is just acetic acid. So we eat acid all the time in our diet, and the kidney helps maintain your acid-base balance by secreting acid into the tubule right here. That's one of the jobs of the nephron. Okay, so that's these three processes right here. Okay, what's another? Oh, filtration. We talked about all these. All right. I'm glad. All right, so filtration is what? The movement of fluid from blood across the wall of the glomerulus into Bowman's capsule. That fluid is basically plasma. And here's something interesting. About 20% of all the blood that's flowing in gets filtered, leaves your blood. All right, that means that you would dehydrate very quickly if you were to lose all of that water through your kidneys. So a very important process is to do what? Not only glucose is resorbed by tubular reabsorption, but what? Also a lot of water is resorbed through tubular reabsorption. Because otherwise we dehydrate right away. As a matter of fact, so much water is reabsorbed that only 1% of the filtrate ever becomes urine. So of everything that leaves the glomerulus and goes into the filtrate, only 1% ever comes out over on this end. The rest gets resorbed because most of it is what? Most of it is water anyway. And water is a precious metabolite that you can't lose unless you drink a lot of water or a lot of some other kind of liquid that has water in it. Like for instance what? Beer. Beer. That's always a good answer. Okay. All right, and then tubular secretion is good for what? Getting rid of things that you don't want in your body. Like what? Ammonia, urea, excess potassium, excess sodium, or hydrogen ions, for instance. Okay. All right, now what helps control your kidney do its job? Well, there are some hormones that play a role in this. How are we doing for time? Ah, plenty of time. We got some hormones that play an important role. Yeah. Let's see if I got any pretty pictures. I tell you what, before we get to control, let's just give you a quiz on the nephron. Okay? Just for fun. So here's a process. What is all this stuff in Bowman's capsule right here called? Here we see that glomerulus. That's a capillary bed, right? And it's leaking out plasma into the glomerulus. What is that fluid inside the glomerulus called again? That's that filtrate, right? And that filtrate is going to move through the proximal convoluted tubule, even though it doesn't look twisty and turny here, right? You should know it's what? All full of twists and turns. What do we call that process? Hopefully it's not on the slide anywhere. I'll try to hide it from you. So this process here of plasma going into Bowman's capsule, what do we call that? That's filtration, right? Okay. And the process where things leave the filtrate and get put back in the blood, what do we call that process? That's tubular reabsorption because it goes back into the blood. Okay. That's the second process. Fantastic. And do I have a slide going the other way? Yeah. Okay, but I got to hide it up. Now here is that other process, right? So here you got filtration. The other process is taking stuff that's in blood and putting it in the renal tubule or the nephron tubule. What do we call that? Tubular secretion. So let's see if we're right. It looks pretty good. So here we have a renal tubule. The peritubular capillary, when it goes from filtrate to blood, we call that reabsorption. When it goes from blood back into the tubule, we call that tubular secretion. So your book actually has some pretty good pictures. And it's not too complicated. Okay? Okay. So now let's talk about hormones and how it helps control the kidneys. Okay? Regulation of urine concentration and volume. And that, guess what? I think this is the last slide. Okay, so this is all we got to talk about. All right, some hormones play an important role in controlling the kidneys. Hormones influence both the concentration and the volume of urine that's produced by the kidney. Here are the names of the three hormones. Antidiuretic hormone. But guess what? No one ever calls it antidiuretic hormone. We call it what? We just call it ADH. It's a lot simpler. So ADH is antidiuretic hormone. That comes from a part of your brain called the posterior pituitary. It's right above the roof of your mouth. There's another hormone we call aldosterone. Let's go back to antidiuretic hormone. If you were to take a diuretic, what would it do for you? A diuretic, what does it make you do? It makes you pee. Right, a diuretic makes you pee. It makes you lose water. All right, so an antidiuretic would do what? It would make you retain water. It's the opposite effect, right? So it's easy to remember what the effect of ADH is. Right, it makes you retain water. Aldosterone is another hormone. It doesn't come from the pituitary. It comes from the adrenal cortex. And it is also an antidiuretic. It decreases urine volume. It decreases water loss, right? And then there's a third hormone called atrionatriuretic hormone. And we call it that. I don't know why we don't say ANH. I guess ANH is kind of hard to say. Harder than atrionatriuretic hormone. And atrionatriuretic hormone is the opposite. Has the opposite effect compared to ADH and aldosterone. It increases urine volume and it increases water loss. And guess where atrial natriuretic hormone comes from? It says it right there in the name. It comes from the atria of your heart. And whenever your heart stretches because your blood volume is too large, right, whenever your atria stretch, that's going to cause you to urinate or to lose water, which is going to do what? It's going to decrease the stretch on the atria. So it's a way of controlling how much your heart has to stretch and how much it has to pump. Okay, so here the question is, which one of these hormones, or which two of these hormones, are antagonistic to each other? Is there anything antagonistic to ADH? ADH? Yeah, because ADH makes you pee, and atrial natriuretic hormone does what? Stops you from peeing. Okay, oh, no, sorry, the other way around. ADH stops you from peeing, but atrial natriuretic hormone makes you pee. All right, so antagonistic to each other. Aldosterone does what? Stops you from peeing. Again, that's antagonistic to atrial natriuretic hormone, right, which makes you urinate. All right, so here we have a nice antagonistic system, and is it good to have an antagonistic system for controlling important functions in your body? Yeah or no? Yeah, okay. Like, give me, for instance, a good control mechanism in your car that's antagonistic. Yeah, the brake and the gas pedal. So again, here you have a brake and a gas pedal over an important function in your body, namely what? Your water balance. That gives you precise control and balance. All right, so those three hormones help regulate your water balance inside your body via your kidneys. And you don't have the study guide, huh? So we can't go over that right now. Except for the first one. Know the structures of the urinary system. What are the structures? Kidney, ureters, urinary bladder, urethra. Okay, that's pretty easy. And then the next question is, which we won't go over, what are the functions of the urinary system? Okay, but what? Regulate water balance, electrolyte balance, control red blood cell production. That's maybe where we will start next time. Regulate water balance, all those kinds of things. All right, so who's got a question on the urinary system? Anybody got a question? No? All right, so that means that we're ready for the next part of the class. Which is what? The quiz. All right, so I'll turn my microphone off so we don't have any questions. Y'all have a Scantron?